Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The historic election of Vice President-elect Kamala Harris has underscored the expanding opportunities for women in politics, either running for office or helping to get others elected. Additionally, a record number of women will serve in the next Congress come January, though they'll still only represent about 1 in 4 seats in the House and Senate. If equal representation is a goal, there's still plenty of work to do. Tina Pierce is an elected member of the Columbus City Schools Board of Education. She's the program manager of a nonpartisan campaign training conference called Ready to Run in December at the John Glenn College of Public Affairs at Ohio State. She holds a PhD in philosophy and political science. Welcome to the show, Tina Pierce.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jean Sinsdak is the Associate Director of the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University, which developed the Ready to Run curriculum. Welcome to the show, Jean.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jean Sinsdak, what trends, what are you seeing this time around when it comes to women, people of color, or let's say non-traditional candidates seeking public office?
Well, the biggest trend from our perspective at the Center for American Women in Politics is that a record number of women ran for office again in 2020. We saw that surge in 2018, and the biggest question for us is, will that surge sort of sustain itself, or was that kind of a blip in the radar? But it was not. The good news is it was not. And so we had a record number of women running, and thus, the after effect, a record number of women have won office at the congressional level. We're still counting all the races at the state legislative level, but it certainly seems on track to at least meet their numbers, if not exceed them. So the trend is going in the right direction. So the biggest outcome, we'll have a record number of women of color serving in Congress, and Republican women did very well this year, and they had some losses in 2018, but they more than made up for those losses going into 2021.
The biggest thing then is that it wasn't a blip. I mean, in the past, in the other years when we said it was the year of the woman, it's always appeared to be a blip. And this time it's two consecutive election cycles.
That's right. You know, change has been sort of progress has been very fitful at best. Mm-hmm. We've had some good years, but it's a very slow and steady trajectory upward. And the pace is accelerating. As you said earlier, though, we still have a long way to go before we get to parity.
What do you credit that this now two cycles in a row trend with? What do you credit for that?
Well, part of it is that, when we have these record numbers of women running, there's a role modeling effect. More women see other women who look like them running for office. And so it sort of opens up the realm of possibility. More women in 2018 ran more authentically as themselves. Our biggest thing is we saw women who in the past might, motherhood was kind of seen as something you maybe as a candidate would keep quiet. You wouldn't draw attention to the fact that you had young children at home. But what we saw sort of changing of the norms and elections where women said, wait a minute, motherhood is an asset, and I'm using that as an example. There are plenty of other types mm-hmm. of examples, but saying this is who I am. I don't look like other candidates. I don't look like the traditional elected official. And so sort of that change message or feeling in 2018 carried through to 2020 that we want people who look different, who look more like us to represent us.
And I also got a feeling that it wasn't a one and done in 2018 like it has been in years past, where they make their one stab at public office and then walk away. And I think the best example of that might be Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor in 2018, lost very narrowly, but took her power at that time and used it to build on.
Yes, I agree. And we've seen a lot of that. We actually saw a number of candidates who had lost in 2018 who came back in 2020 and ran again, some successfully, some not. But the key is, and we've been saying this for years, that it's not a one and done, right? It's mm-hmm. a lifetime experience to get immersed in politics. And you may dip in and out in different ways. But to think of it as a lifetime journey and not, just you win an election and you leave, or you lose an election and you leave and you win and you stay. It's that you have to be prepared to be in it for the long haul. And we're seeing more of that, which is terrific.
Tina Pierce, let's talk about your own experience running for public office. I want to talk about Ready to Run, but just about your experience. Was your campaign for school board your first?
No. So I first ran in 2015. And at that time, we had two incumbents that had decided to want to continue their board service, and they were running as well. It's interesting because just as Jean is indicating, my experience in running that first time was very similar to what she's indicated. You're told from a professor standpoint to be very objective, to not let partisan politics or relationships come into the classroom. And so to that point, it really took time for people to get to know me, to get to know my values, my policies, the things that I wanted to advocate for and push for our school district. And so it took a lot of time to just get myself known to the community outside of the work that I was doing as a professor at Denison University and at Ohio State. So that first go around, I was able to win the primary election in a very good fashion, but then I was unable to win the actual general election, lost by 2 percentage points. So came very, very close and was determined and committed to help our district. So ran again in the 2019-2018 cycle and was successful in that run.
Did you feel the impulse to walk away after losing that first time?
No, it actually had the quite opposite effect.
Okay.
I was more determined than ever because I saw the particular challenges that not only women face when running for office, but also as a woman of color, I saw the unique challenges that we face. And I was very determined to make sure that not only did I open up the door for myself to go in to be able to help our district, but to also open the door for women of color who wanted to come. As I was coming into office or even after I'm in office.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That is Tina Pierce. She is a senior lecturer at the OSU Glenn College of Public Affairs, and she's the Ready to Run program manager there. We're going to talk about Ready to Run this hour. She's also a Columbus City Schools board member. Also with us is Jean Sinsdak. She's associate director of the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University, which developed the curriculum for Ready to Run that OSU is using. Jean Sinsdak, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, represents several historic firsts. She's the first woman, as well as the first woman of color, the first Black woman, the first South Asian woman elected to the country's second highest office. But I wanted to talk about her and that historical precedents she's setting. With what you said about running more authentically as themselves, because I really felt like that's what she did.
Absolutely, I would agree. And you know, what's interesting for us, again, from our perspective at the center, is it finally puts to rest her election as the vice president, puts to rest to some degree the question we constantly get, which is about electability. Can women get elected to the highest offices in the country? And we know that they can. And so, and you know, when you have this moment where there's this, you know, woman of color and the first woman of color to get elected as the vice president, I mean, she, you know, looks different than every vice president who has ever come before her. And she's unapologetically herself and, you know, says, this is who I am and this is what I bring to the table. And I think that is so crucial for so many people out there. You know, we've all seen the pictures of young girls looking at their TV screen, seeing her give her, you know, her speech accepting when they won and what that means to them growing up. And it's both for girls and for boys. They now see the possibility of a woman in these offices and it will feel normal to them. And, we can't understate that enough, how important that is going forward.
When you think about how Ready to Run came about, Jean Sinsdak, at the Center for American Women in Politics, you know, how many years ago it was when it started. Can you talk about the trajectory of just the program and what the expectations were back then?
Yeah, so Ready to Run, we've been running it in New Jersey, which is our home state of Rutgers University, since 1998, so over 20 years now. And it very much started out of research. So it was research-driven programming. The research showed that women were far less likely to get asked to run for office by other, you know, powers that be, other elected officials, party officials, etc. So they were far less likely to get asked to run for office. And they also said, you know, a lot of women candidates or potential women candidates, that they didn't feel like they had a roadmap to get there. You know, they weren't in the traditional political circles. So they weren't being asked. They weren't invited. They didn't feel like they knew where to start. So Ready to Run was developed with this idea that, one, you know, we are inviting you to run for office. We are going to demystify the process for women who are interested in getting involved and running for office. And we're going to provide that very practical roadmap. So there, you know, there's the inspiration and then there's the practical knowledge about how to do it and how, and just completely demystifying the process. And we started it, you know, we are a national organization, but we are based in New Jersey. And at the time we started the program, we were always, New Jersey was always in or near the bottom 10 for the proportion of women serving in its state legislature. So as we all know, change starts at home. Mm-hmm. And that's how Ready to Run, you know, so we started it very much as a state-based campaign training. And although campaign trainings very, you know, are very similar across state lines, there are specific things about each state's culture that influence, you know, that may help shape the curriculum. So we, you know, we created the framework and the structure, and now we're working with, we have partners in about 20 other states, including Ohio, to run their own Ready to Run, but really with their personal, you know, sort of state-based focus on it, put their personal state lens on it. And so it's been very successful, and we've trained thousands of women to run for office.
And it's I always say non-denominational. It's
partisan,
right? And mm-hmm. You said that a record number of Republican women this year in office. Do you think it's helping both sides then?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So our program's all nonpartisan. They're very much the nuts and bolts of running for office. They're open to, you know, any and all who want to get involved. We don't focus on the issues at all. It's really very much, you know, whoever you are, how to launch a campaign, how to set up a campaign plan, how to ask for money, how to talk to the media, sort of all of those pieces, that practical pieces you need to run for office. And so we've had women from, you know, every party attend our programs.
Do you find that there's a conversation to be had about that there are different cultures within the parties or not? Is that more of a regional state thing and less of a political party thing?
You know, I would say it's both. It really depends on where you are.
We just lost you.
I mean, there are differences across states. Mm-hmm. New Jersey has do you have me?
Yeah, I have you now. It keeps breaking
up. Can you
hear
me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, if you can't hear me, let me know. Yeah. But it's, you know, it varies across states. In New Jersey, we have a very strong local party system. The county parties are very, very, very much the ones in power. But, you know, our partners in Iowa, for example, when they were doing their Ready to Run, they really found that they needed to have a session on running in an urban versus a rural district, because those types of experiences were very different for candidates. So, you know, every state has its, but the party structure is very, you know, it's very different. It was more sort of loose and more transparent in their state from their perspective. So it really varies depending on where you live. Your state's culture and political culture can make a big difference in terms of how you would approach your candidacy.
And, you know, as far as the age, how is age playing a role from what you're seeing, Jean Sinzdak?
In terms of candidates running and when they choose to run, the difference we've seen in recent years, you know, women used to wait to run for office until their kids were older, until maybe their careers were more established, when they felt like they had more time, in other words, mm-hmm. And more experience to run. That's changing a lot, which is very heartening to see, because we want people of all ages to run for office. We're seeing women run at younger ages. We're seeing, you know, young people be sort of less inclined to wait to get involved. They're just jumping right in. So, you know, it's evolving. It's definitely changing as the years have gone on. It's definitely been changing. And we're seeing people from all different backgrounds and all different ages running for office.
Well, Jean Sinzdak, I want to thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
You bet. Jean Sinsdak, she's Associate Director of the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University, which developed the curriculum for Ready to Run, which has been embraced by the OSU Glenn College of Public Affairs. Staying with us, Tina Pierce, PhD, Senior Lecturer at the Glenn College. She manages the Ready to Run program there. She's also a Columbus City Schools Board member. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7. NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Although a record number of women will serve in the next Congress, including record numbers of blacks and Republicans, females still will fill just 1 in 4 seats between the House and Senate. Candidates across the country and at all levels of government faced unprecedented challenges this year with the pandemic. We're talking about that and the hurdles for women in politics. Still with us is Tina Pierce. She's program manager of Ready to Run, a nonpartisan campaign training conference next month at the OSU Glenn College of Public Affairs, an elected official herself. She is a member of the Columbus City Schools Board of Education. Joining us is OSU political scientist Paul Beck. Welcome back, Paul.
Good to be with you, Ann, and hello, Tina.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Bryn Byrd is a farmer and Granville Township trustee. Her first run for public office in 2018 was profiled in a documentary titled Represent. Bryn Byrd, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome. Thank you.
Bryn, you grew up on your family's farm outside Granville and never sought elected office before 2016, then came the 2016 election. A lot of people say that was a turning point for them to become active in politics. What about you?
I had been active in politics before then in policy work. I went to graduate school in Washington, D.C. So when I went to D.C., I was not very politically active, but I think once you're there, you kind of pick up the bug. And my grandfather, Charlie Byrd, was a township trustee in Genoa Township, Westerville, for many years. And so I always watched the work he did at the local level and just how everybody, respected that work. And when they had a pothole, they knew who to call. And so actually in 2017, for me, running at a local level was a lot to kind of rebuild trust. I think that, a way that we can rebuild trust in the political process where a lot of people, I think really had felt disenfranchised is at the local level. And so that's why I really wanted to run in 2017 and stay really close to home right here in Granville.
Why was trust an issue?
I think that, I have family members, my brother in particular, even we talk about it. And, he kind of feels like my vote doesn't matter. What's happening, I can vote for them, but they're going to do whatever they want anyways. And I think for me running at a really local level where people have my phone number, I stand at the farmer's market every Saturday morning at the same place for 25 years. I joke I'm a sitting duck for all of the issues at the township, but they see me, they can call me. And that's one thing that I've heard over and over is somebody calls with an issue. There's two other trustees and, we always call back within the hour. They have our cell phone and how many times I've had people say to me, wow, you called me back. Wow. You really heard me. You really listened and they see my family, they see me with my children. And they start to rebuild that trust that the democratic process works and our local elected officials do work for the people. I do work for the people of Granville Township. And I think they start to see that and get excited about, other offices and getting to know their other elected officials.
Jean Sinsdak at the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers mentioned the urban-rural divide and how they needed to start using different kinds of lessons depending on that, whether you're talking about an urban or a rural candidate. Did that seem relevant to you?
I think, you know, that we talk often, I also do some work with ruralorganizing.org, where we do a lot of polling and understanding of rural politics. And mm-hmm. one of the things that in rural America, we take care of each other, we take care of our neighbors. And so I think that was one part that I really did talk about is, you know, I'm here to listen to what matters to you and your neighbors and your family and your community. And, you know, we're Granville, we're not too far from Columbus. And I do think that there's worry about growth and development. And so having those conversations about, you know, those are my concerns too. So a lot of it was taking care of, that is like a big rural statement is that we like to take care of each other. So I really focused a lot on that.
And then she also mentioned, or I think it was Jean, might have been Tina Pierce, but about the authentic, you know, the authentic you, more women are ran more authentically as themselves. Did you ever feel like do you have that impulse to maybe change your glasses or change your hair or not talk about your kids as much, anything like that?
So the documentary Represent, you'll see my hair is straight in a couple scenes. And my three daughters and everybody commented afterwards saying, your hair is straight. Why is your hair straight? I have very naturally curly hair. Uh-huh. And when I first ran and I went to my first fundraiser, I straightened it because I did think in my head, you have to have straight hair to be professional. Like it's time to grow up. You know, you need to have straight hair to be a little more professional. And I quickly dropped that decision when it took, you know, 45 minutes. And right. I think people have enjoyed that I just did run with curly hair. But also I do take my kids everywhere. And again, I think that's a central theme of Represent. And that is definitely a central theme of me is I have three children, 6, 4, and 1. They were much younger even when I was running. And, you know, I do take them to the Chamber of Commerce meeting with a backpack full of toys and they sit on the ground. I take them to, you know, the downtown association meeting where they sit on some stranger's lap and you know, draw pictures with them. And that has been something that I'm really proud of is, you know, having my kids with me and letting that space be open to a lot of other women and men and parents who, you know, have their children and sometimes feel like, oh, I can't go to that meeting because my kids won't be quiet. And I'm really trying to show like we're all together. We can all show a little grace to each other and to kind of try and break that down. And, you know, I always say that's a big reason, too, why I ran at the time I was asked to run by my friend Andrew. Cone and I just at that time thought, oh, I have little kids. But then I saw the picture of Liz Brown voting for herself, holding
city
her,
council
her
member
baby.
Of in Columbus. Yeah.
Yeah. And that picture of Liz doing that meant so much to me. And seeing her vote, holding her child showed me I can do this too. And in Represent, there's many scenes where I'm nursing my brand new baby at an Ohio Township Association meeting, which is the average age, you know, is much over 50. It's a lot older than 50 and very male centered. And I'm really proud of those images now out there too, just showing, you know, other parents that they too can, you know, have their kids and bring them to work. And it's going to be uncomfortable sometimes, but we can all show each other a little grace in that space too. And that families and younger parents should be a part of the political process.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That is Bryn Bird. She's a farmer and a township trustee in Granville Township. She was profiled in the new documentary from filmmaker Hillary Batchelder titled Represent. Paul Beck, Bryn Bird sounds like sort of a composite almost of the modern female candidate, in this case, rural.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm very impressed with the kind of talent and motivation that's there. In the modern women candidates, some of the men as well. I think it's a big change from the past where people had to really be recruited to run for office. And they were typically recruited by the political parties, but now things have opened up a lot. And I think that's a good thing for the operations of American democracy.
You know, Tina Pierce, you know, you mentioned that your first experience running in 2015 was one thing and that you were not disillusioned. You went and ran again. It seems like even a lot has changed since 2015, right?
Definitely a lot has changed. One of the things that we're starting to see in all of our communities is the level of advocacy is increasing. Individuals want to learn what organizations they can connect to amplify their voice. They want to learn what organizations are out there advancing policy initiatives and changes. And so that's why we're super excited with this year's Ready to Run program to really focus our second track on connecting individuals who aren't quite ready to run yet, but know that they want to amplify their advocacy within the community. And so we're connecting them with organizations like the League of Women Voters, like the Matriots. We're bringing men into the conversation. So while the focus is to definitely increase the leadership of women throughout and across the state of Ohio, we understand that we need to partner with men in a real and authentic way. Men need to donate to the campaigns of women, but they also can partner alongside to help run those campaigns, to bring levels of expertise to those campaigns, and to also let women know what men want in terms of policy initiatives as we move forward. So we're super excited to really strengthen, again, our components for track two, that advocacy. I'm not quite ready to run, but I want to amplify the level of advocacy work that I'm doing in the community.
Right. It's not just a candidate or not a candidate. You could help run a campaign. You could advocate on an issue. All of this is resume building, right?
Exactly. And what we're super excited to start off that first day. So December 4th, we're starting off with our virtual film premiere of Represent, which represents what women go through when they're running and campaigning for these offices. But it does it in a very unique way. So not only do you have Brynn, who's showing what's happening in Granville, Ohio, but you also have Maya, who's sparking this youth movement in Detroit, Michigan. And then you have Julia, who is a Korean immigrant, and she's running for state office in Chicago, a suburb in Chicago, Illinois. And so what we're hoping is to really galvanize not just individuals, again, who are excited and ready to run for office in the next cycle, but also those individuals that understand I have a voice and what I have to say is important and it contributes to our democracy. And again, I want to come together with like-minded individuals to amplify my voice in the political process.
Paul Beck, what do you think has changed? Is it just that younger is it just a demographic shift now and we're seeing the benefits of that for women, for people of color when it comes to the political arena?
Well, I think there have been changes both on the demand side and the supply side. And let me talk about the supply side for a minute. More and more people are motivated to get involved in politics at the local level and beyond the local level. And also the channels through which they get involved are less controlled by sort of the political party establishment the way it used to be. So there's been an opening there. And then on the demand side, I think we are yearning for more talent in the political sphere, people who represent different kinds of interests and perspectives. And you certainly see that in terms of people's ability to jump into a primary election, let's say, for a statewide or even congressional or state legislative office, and be able to win that primary over a candidate who has been endorsed by the political party leadership.
You know, Brynn, I was thinking about your story, and it's like you can't really underscore enough the fact that you were exposed to politics growing up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you felt really comfortable with it. You know, the mystery of it all wasn't a mystery to you. It was just you saw what a relative was doing.
Right. I think, and I always joke too, my birthday is February 12th, Abraham Lincoln's birthday. Mm-hmm. And so growing up, I would read all of his speeches and I was very obsessed with him and talking to family members and my grandfather. And I come from a very strong line of women activists. I have family that you can, that were participated in the National League of Women Voters, you know, during the 1920s. I found journals from my great grandmother, you know, about her own time as a suffragette. And so I think it was natural for me. But what I look at too now is my daughters and seeing them in the documentary and, you know, watching them stand up with me when I'm doing these speeches. And, you know, when in the documentary, my friend Cecile Shaw is in there helping me with my campaign. She later ran for school board in Granville and won. And, you know, that during that campaign, my six-year-old knew she was on the ballot, you know, knew who she was running against, why she was running, you know, when we voted for her. And I think about them, and I can't even imagine how far they're going to go when being a part of our community, being a part of, you know, doing this work is just so natural to them. I mean, and just going to events, it's just so natural to them. I can't imagine how far they're going to go. And I wanted to point out too, you were talking, you know, the Ready to Run, one of my good friends, Michelle Newman, also helped me on my campaign. It was her first, she and I didn't know really what we were doing. And so she made a logo and we kind of started doing this work. And from that, she kind of became my pseudo campaign manager. And after that was asked to help other Licking County candidates run campaigns. And from that, she kind of had said, oh, I'm only going to do this work. I'm only going to do candidacy work. She went to Ready to Run and then was tapped and asked if she would run for state school board. And she was just elected, you know, 2 weeks ago to the state school board. And so I look at that too, of women's campaigns are oftentimes have women helpers and women working with them in different positions in this like grassroots and volunteer capacity. And a lot of times that does open the door and makes this whole mystery of running for office a little bit easier to understand. And then, yeah, they do gain that understanding and confidence and connections and networks, and then they're ready to run themselves.
We are going to take a quick break, then we'll get back to it. That's Bryn Bird. She's a farmer and a township trustee in Granville Township. She was profiled in the new documentary from filmmaker Hillary Batchelder. It's titled Represent. It will be shown at the Ready to Run program at Ohio State's Glenn College of Public Affairs. Also with us, Tina Pierce. She's a senior lecturer at the OSU Glenn College, and she is manager of the Ready to Run program there, and she is also a Columbus City Schools board member. Also with us, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at OSU, Paul Beck. We will be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the gains women candidates have made in 2020, including the historic election of Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. But despite those gains, many hurdles still remain for women in politics. Still with us, Tina Pierce, PhD senior lecturer at Ohio State's Glenn College of Public Affairs, where she is the Ready to Run program manager. We've been talking about Ready to Run. It's a program to get women involved in politics. She is also a Columbus City Schools board member. We're also joined by OSU political scientist Paul Beck and farmer and Granville Township trustee Bryn Bird, one of three women candidates profiled in a documentary from filmmaker Hillary Batchelder titled Represent. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Paul Beck, this year marks the 100 years since the 19th Amendment was ratified, giving women the right to vote. We've mentioned earlier, it's kind of the trajectory for women in politics has been sort of fits and starts. My experience covering the Ohio General Assembly was that a lot of women back in the day, 30 years ago, got into politics because their husband died in office and they took over their seat, that kind of a thing. Why has it been slow going for women in this country compared to a lot of other Western countries?
Well, I think for one thing, the parties sort of blocked entry of women, feeling that maybe women were not going to be as strong a candidate as a male candidate would be. Parties now have less influence over who is recruited and runs for office. And so in a way, that kind of barrier has been lowered. But the other thing that I think is important is that women have been, I think, more motivated in recent years to suffer through the barbs and criticisms that often befall a candidate, the kinds of attacks that are launched on a candidate. And they're just much willing to handle those kinds of things. And I think that's a good thing as well. And you see, of course, women moving more fully into other professions as well. Law certainly is one of them. Medical schools now have a much higher percentage of women. And so it's gotten beyond the traditional careers for women that were very restricted. And now there's been a kind of a widening of career opportunities, and politics is one of them.
I remember in the early 70s when my mother ran for county commissioner and they made her take the picture of the five kids out of the brochure, you know, the leaflet that she was passing around, because it was something that they wanted to hide. But something that she told me, too, was that a lot of other women would say to her, "Why do you want to get involved in politics?" Tina Pierce, the why of it, the why does it matter, and why do women want to get involved in politics? How do you respond to that?
You know, so that why is very different for each individual. My why started for me at a very young age. So unlike Brynn, my family was not into politics. My family did vote in every election, and I can remember from the time that I can first remember my grandparents and my mother taking me with them to vote, and it was very important that we voted. But we were a very working-class family. My grandparents were janitors at The Ohio State University, and my mother worked as an administrative assistant for various executives at Ohio Health. And so I came through a very different trajectory. I would see the limitations of potholes and no lights on our street and a lack of affordable housing and programming for me and my little brother, and I would question those types of things. So for me, my why started very early on as I began to question, why are there so many inequities and inequalities between the experience that I have and the experience that maybe my peers in Dublin are having? And then as I became a mother, that why became even more critically important for me. I had the great pleasure of getting all this knowledge and skills and expertise as a student at Ohio State in education, studying Columbus City Schools. And then as our children started to matriculate through our school district, it became so much more important for me to bring that expertise, to bring my knowledge to our board. And it started at a lower level. So I didn't just decide one day I'm going to, you know, advocate and give back by running for school board. Mm-hmm. I was served on school-based councils at Clinton Elementary, at Dominion Middle School. I was engaged with our PTAs. I was the parent that helped with our MLK oratorical program over at Clinton. And so I was active and engaged in all these programs and Girl Scouts and, you know, the Room Mom. So it slowly started to elevate in terms of my level of advocacy. And so my why was definitely connected to not just my experience of being a product of our Columbus City Schools, having the expertise and the training from The Ohio State University, but also being a parent of children within our district. And again, being passionate about bringing my knowledge and expertise to our board.
Did you see your activism as at the time, and I mean activism in the sense of just being involved in your district at different levels, as resume building at the time?
At the time, I did not. The time, I literally saw it as, you know, doing what moms do. And oftentimes, you know, and I'll open this up to dads as well. Oftentimes when you're in schools that have a lot of activities going on and kids have plays and music and theatrical and all these things going on, it almost becomes a race. Like, what parent is going to be active and engaged? And if you're not that active and engaged parent, then it says something, you know, it signals that maybe you don't care about how your kids are doing. So in a lot of instances,
as the parent, you're just trying to show up for your kids. You're trying to show up for the school so they can see, I care about what happens with my child, not just in the classroom, but also out of the classroom, if the teachers feel supported, if the community knows that I'm here 100% all hands on deck. So I was one of those parents that was just showing up to everything because I was committed to, one, my children having a great experience, to their teachers knowing that I was there to support them, and to, again, the school knowing that we have a volunteer in, you know, Dr. Tina Pierce showing up for these things. And so at that time, I didn't really see it as a resume builder. I saw it, you know, as really the service of being a parent, you know, to give back, to support my children's school.
You know, that's really, Paul, back that what Tina Pierce just described sounds, how do I put this? It's like it's very female to be doing things because it's the right thing to do. The males, a little more Machiavellian traditionally, think about getting that appointment to a commission to say I got a gubernatorial appointment, you know, checking off boxes on a resume building prospect.
Yeah, I think for males, traditionally at least, it was more a matter of trying to build a resume to advance themselves.
Are you there, Paul? Okay, it looks like we lost Paul, so we'll try to get... Oh, Paul, we just lost you. We didn't hear what you were saying, Paul.
Well, I was going to say that women have always been involved in supporting their children in the schools. And now I think what's happened is they see a need for their perspective on school boards and beyond school boards in just kind of you know, regular politics and running for public office. And so there's been a change in attitude, maybe a feeling that yes, I can do this, and it's important that I do this. There are things that are wrong with the political system, and maybe what I ought to do is get involved so that I can help fix those things.
You know, Tina Pierce, when you're talking about ready to run, is part of the curriculum asking the participants to take a look at their life and you know, look at these things that they do and regard them differently?
Yes, definitely. So Ready to Run features two tracks. Track one is I'm ready to run, now what? And that's really for women, you know, for individuals that plan to run for office immediately. So we want to equip you with the skills so you can hit the ground running. Track two is I'm not ready to run yet, but, and the track is for individuals that are interested in getting more information about the ways to get involved in politics. And so through all of our offerings, participants get how-to instructions on running for office. They get fundraising and media skills. They get real-world advice and best practices from experts. They get strategies for positioning themselves for public leadership. And in all of those sessions, we are very reflective. We ask them to think about the current volunteer work that they do, the current advocacy that they do, and to analyze that and connect that to maybe some of the things that are on their resume, to connect that to some of the people and positions that they want to connect more with. So in all of our sessions, while we are definitely inspiring individuals to launch their campaign, to have a better understanding of party politics, to come up with those digital strategies, not just for political campaigns, but for advocacy as well, we have that reflective moment where we want you to think about how all of your work comes together in one general story. And I'll give myself as the example. All of my work, and Paul can probably think about this because I was one of his students when I was in graduate school.
Okay.
All of my work had the general theme of education. I was very passionate to expand educational equity for everyone. I didn't want a zip code to determine someone's opportunities. I didn't want race or gender to determine someone's opportunities. And so that theme has really been that centralizing theme for all the work that I've done. My work with the NAACP, my work with Kids Voting Central Ohio, my work with our Columbus City Schools and on our Columbus Board of Education. And even here at The Ohio State University, I have the great opportunity to really design and craft a program that really empowers but also educates individuals about how our political system works.
And Bryn Byrd, I'm wondering now, you know, you're going to run for re-election?
Yes, I'm up next year.
Have you thought about different offices that might interest you now that you've put your big toe in the water?
I have. You were saying your mom ran for county commissioner. I always think that would be a really amazing job. Living in Licking County and having, you know, being a Democrat, being a progressive is definitely a little bit harder when I start to think about, you know, is there a future office? But I will say I also love being a township trustee. You know, like, yes, my grandfather was a township trustee, but I remember going to his funeral and just how I said, you know, that how many people showed up and just thanked him for all the times that he was able to be there, you know, for his community members. And I truly love being a township trustee. I love every day is something a little bit different. During the windstorms, you know, we had to, you know, take care of the trees. I get calls, you know, neighbors who might be arguing over political signs, and getting to kind of be that peacekeeper is a big part of our job, I joke, and just going out and asking people when they have an issue with their neighbor. You know, my first question is always, do you know your neighbor's name? And if they don't, you know, getting them their neighbor's name and phone number and encouraging them to build that community. So I do love being a township trustee, and I love being able to help other women in my community and other men, but it's mostly been women who've also now kind of seen me in this role and have come to me and talked about, you know, what other offices can they run for. You know, I've had friends who have told me that, you know, just having watching me run for a local office and helping campaign has, you know, they've then gone on and run for even state, the state house. They, you know, didn't win, but just taking that leap. And so I really, I think I found a perfect place for me right now with my young kids. And being able to be with them, help with my family's farm. I do, you know, like I was saying, I do organizing and advocacy in other areas for farm workers and agriculture. And so I think this is a great position. And that's what I want people to think too, you know, running for office or having these roles, you can do it while you have children. You can do it while you have other jobs. You can do it while you have other interests and kind of continue in that field. So I just wanted to echo that. And when I went to Ready to Run, that was what they made you do. They made you come up with that speech and then they filmed you while you gave the speech. And I won the national FFA extemporaneous. Well, I won the state extemporaneous public speaking and I was like top three nationally. So I thought I was a really great public speaker. And then they film you and then you watch yourself and you watch your hands flail about and all the, you know, things that you kind of do. And that was really eye-opening. I kind of went into Ready to Run a little bit like, oh, I know everything. I don't need this. I know what I'm doing. And came out of it with pages and pages of notes. And I also came out of it with a list of women sitting at my table with me. Mm-hmm. And I still email them. Michelle from Local Matters was at it. And she and I still check in with each other. And so I think about that often too. It's like, that was a great event for me to go to because I definitely thought I was amazing. And I came out having learned so much and places to grow. And one of the biggest things too, is they showed me how I get so mad when people misunderstand what I say and they would like coax you. And then I would kind of get really mad and kind of angry back. And that conversation of, well, when that happens on the campaign trail, you need to slow yourself down. And it was a wonderful event. So I really encourage anybody thinking of running or helping somebody or finding their advocacy voice to attend the event because it was very eye-opening for me.
Well, we'll have a link to Ready to Run at OSU's Glenn College on our website at WOSU.org/allsides if you're interested in learning more about the program. Tina Pierce, does it feel like we're just about out of time, but I wanted to ask you after, you know, looking over this trajectory, does it feel like it's getting sort of exponential at this point, the growth?
It is. And so let me just add two things that we're really excited to be doing with our Ready to Run program is, you know, since we brought it here in 2015, we've had 340 alumni go through the program, and 10% of our alumni have run for office and currently hold elective office. We want to grow that. And so our goal in the upcoming years is to take our Ready to Run program on the road. And so not only will we be offering it here on our main campus, but we're going to branch off and offer it at our branch campuses as well. And so we're super excited about that to focus on. Again, we know that a lot of the advocacy starts at the grassroots level. So we want to focus on that. We want to lean into that and give individuals and local communities the opportunity to gain these skills as well. And then I'll also add one of the things that we're excited about with our upcoming program is that there is a space and place for students. Students can come to Ready to Run as well. So we encourage young people to get engaged, get involved, and join us at Ready to Run as well.
Tina Pierce, senior lecturer at OSU Glenn College of Public Affairs, where she is the Ready to Run program manager. She's also a member of the Columbus City Schools Board of Education. Bryn Bird, farmer and township trustee in Granville Township, profiled in the new documentary from filmmaker Hillary Batchelder titled Represent. And Paul Beck, professor emeritus of political science at Ohio State University. Thanks to you all and to everybody else. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.